Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to talk about seat work that makes sense for reading. This is a blast from the past. This entry first posted on my website on September 12, 2020, and it reposted on August 24, 2024. So about a four-year since I had put this up. The reason I went back to it is I noticed a couple of research studies that were published just this year about seat work, and it reminded me of this blog. Like many professors, I have long looked askance at worksheets and their role in American reading instruction, though I'd relied on them as a teacher, I've got to admit. These newer studies that I mentioned suggest that worksheets aren't as bad as we've been led to believe. Good teachers often use a mix of direct instruction along with some practice sheets. We shouldn't be ashamed or embarrassed, but nevertheless, there are studies, and I've got one that I wasn't aware of before, but Kathy Block and her colleagues published a study in 2009 that suggests that traditional seat work can be improved upon. It's very much in the line of this blog entry, and yet it has real data showing benefits from the kind of seat work that they were testing. Now, that study assigned readings to the children to do on their own, but provided provocative questions that required students to write extensive answers. And this had a positive impact upon achievement. I think the suggestions that I'm going to make should be useful in that direction as well. Now, remember, this was published originally in September 12, 2020. And that original entry received 9 comments from teachers and others. And I've got a link on my website with this blog for people who want to go and see the original comments on it. Now, the original question that elicited this was, teacher had written, "I work with students in small groups daily and need the rest of the students to be engaged in meaningful practice of their new literacy skills. What types of activities would be best for this practice?" Well, obviously, I've already mentioned one, but here's what I wrote at the time, and I've updated this a little bit, but not much. "The benefits of small group instruction are obvious. Teachers can make the learning experience more apt and intense. The small numbers allow for more responsiveness, more vigilant monitoring and fine-tuning of the teaching, all good things. The downside of small group instruction should be equally evident. While the teacher's working with one small group, the rest of the kids are on their own. Much more learning takes place with the teacher, and frankly, much less with the kids on their own, though the idea of these seat work activities is to try to, let's see if we can boost that a bit. There are some supports and approaches that can mitigate this problem, though their availability is uneven. For instance, some schools provide teacher's aides, and this assistance can allow productive activity with a couple of groups simultaneously. That's a help. There may be parent volunteers who play that role. Some schools are close to a college and have access to pre-service teachers. And then there are those classrooms with multiple computers that allow students to work with research-proven programs. All those situations exist, but there are many more teachers who are on their own trying to manage small groups. I suspect you're one of those. Well, even in those cases, there are things a teacher can do to minimize the problem. For instance, in some schemes, the teacher moves among the groups. This takes various forms. In paired reading, the teacher goes from pair to monitor progress, to guide partners' responses and add some teaching to the mix. I recommend that all the kids in a class work on fluency simultaneously to make this as efficient as possible. The groups might be working with different books, but all the kids are engaged in the same activity, just with partners. Sometimes teachers alternate between two guided reading groups, interacting with one while the other reads and moving back and forth. That's cumbersome, but it is workable. Another possibility is book club groups in which the kids play a big role and operate in the group discussions. This allows the teacher to move profitably among even more groups. Now, teachers can also have everyone in the class reading the same selection at the same time. In other words, you don't have to do everything in groups. What varies in this case is the amount of scaffolding, support, and extension that will be provided to some students. That increases the amount of teaching delivered to the lowest readers. They get more help and decreases it for the best, which fits nicely with Carol Connor's research on what leads to the greatest learning for a class. Connor found that the best readers could make real progress reading on their own and being engaged in more independent activities. She didn't find the same benefits for those other students, the ones who were struggling a bit. In any event, I've long recommended that teachers minimize small group work. Often, such work is unnecessary, engaged in only because teachers are required to do it by their district. This leads to silly stuff like teachers delivering the same lesson multiple times. While I try to avoid any more small group teaching than necessary, I'd never ban the practice. It's just too valuable, and classroom life is too complicated to not have access to it, at least when it can be used appropriately. So let's say you use small group instruction strategically to target the learning needs of students, and you need to know what kinds of activities to assign the other kids. Well, for that, all you need to do is turn your attention to the research on seat work. Except there is no body of research on seat work. That's changing a little bit since I wrote this, but just one study as far as I can tell, and I was missing that Collins study. And though helpful, it doesn't even attempt to describe appropriate instruction in any kind of specific detail. I could say that about that Collins study, too. It didn't go into great detail about the range of lessons that were provided. This is an issue without a lot of empirical data, just lots of authoritative opinion. So I want to add a bit of advice to the mix. Use activities that require a lot of accountable reading and writing. And as you can see, that Collins study certainly did that. We want kids to read and write a lot. Some schemes aimed at doing that reduce instruction markedly to free up reading time. I'm not talking about that kind of thing, since studies haven't found those practices to be very productive for most kids. The accountability issue is big here. If students know that there will be some real follow-up that will take them back through the text in detail, it changes both their reading behavior and their learning. I'm not a big fan of one-on-one conferencing in reading because it increases the amount of time kids are away from the teacher and minimizes their accountability. There are various ways of requiring reading during the time a teacher is busy with another group. The teacher might encourage students to attempt that day's selection on their own before they try to undertake it with the teacher's guidance. The same thing can be done, frankly, with a social studies or science chapter. That permits students to read such texts multiple times. Another possibility is to teach a writing lesson just prior to starting with reading groups and to have the boys and girls working on their compositions or revisions while the teacher's elsewhere. The same can be done with vocabulary lessons. However, if students have problems with the work tied to such lessons, the teacher will have to follow up. So it's important that the seat work not be so demanding or complicated that children need teacher help. I've tried this with math, which would be fine if doing the problems wasn't such a big part of math learning. Teachers really need to be available to take part in that classroom activity, so that pairing wasn't a good choice. Accountability means that the teacher is going to have to closely monitor student success. This can be done several ways, but usually through either follow-up discussion, small group or whole class, or writing. The best seat work activities will guide students to engage the meaning of the text more deeply. That's one of the things I liked in that Collins study. That's a Collins block study. That's really what they had done. I suspect this is as true for seat work as for other pedagogical endeavors. That's why many worksheets and centers simply don't work very well. To complete them, it usually isn't necessary to think much about the text. What kinds of activities fit the bill? Well, here are a few that can be done with any text that the students are trying to read. The key is to focus them on key parts of the text or language that you suspect will trip them up. Number one, sentence reducing and sentence combining. Get students to dig into the meaning of sentences by recomposing them. For instance, have them turn these three sentences into one. And here are the three sentences. Here's the first one. Cities in many countries have special building laws. Two, buildings must be strong and flexible. Three, That way they won't collapse during an earthquake. And so the idea is you've got these three sentences. I want you to turn that into one good, meaningful sentence. And I've got an answer on this one. To keep buildings from collapsing during an earthquake, cities in many countries have special laws that require the buildings to be strong and flexible. You could build a lot of those out of a text. Or try having the kids break the sentence down into multiple sentences. And again, got an example. Here's the original sentence. So Haley began drawing out her ideas to make charms that look like earrings. I want the kids to turn that into three sentences. Haley draws out her ideas. She makes charms. The charms look like earrings. That kind of a skill is really helpful for kids that are trying to read complicated sentences. Here's a second idea. Have the students work with cohesion analysis. Get the students to connect the ideas across a text. To track the ideas, students can mark each appearance of an idea with different colors or by some other marking system. Here I used our underline in italics and bolding to show the links. The original text is, when disasters such as storms, floods, and earthquakes strike an area, people from all over the world want to help. They know that someday they may need help themselves. They also know that it is the right thing to do and that it is rewarding. I think that when people are in need, it is important for all of us to find a way to help out. So that's the original. And so you want the kids to go in and, well, the first subject in this passage was disasters. Remember, when disasters. So what I want the kids to do there is let's underline the word disasters. And then let's find all the other words or phrases that are used to refer to disasters. And there's one, storms, floods, and earthquakes. Those are all disasters. And so I'd underline both disasters and storms. And then the next big idea is people from all over the world. People from all over the world. And boy, that one comes up a lot. I put that one in italics. But then you get, they know that someday... those people all over the world, that someday they, again, italics, may need help themselves, again, italics. They also know that it is the right thing to do. Wow. And again, at the end, I think that when people are in need, it is important for all of us. Remember, those are the people from all over the world. And then the same thing with the word help, 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 and help out. And so on. And help is sometimes referred to as it. They also know that it is the right thing to do. That is, helping is the right thing to do. Kids who are going through and trying to make these connections are really figuring out how to understand the text. Third idea is dealing with vocabulary and context. Lift some sentences from the text the kids have just read or about to read, and have the students use the context to figure out the meaning of the underlined word, and then have them replace the word with an appropriate synonym or phrase. And again, an example, buildings must be strong and flexible. That way they won't collapse during an earthquake, and collapse is underlined. What the kids have to do is figure out, what could you replace collapse with? Buildings must be strong and flexible. That way they won't fall down during an earthquake. That's another task that they can do. And a fourth one requires text comparisons. Have students write text comparisons. They can compare today's text with any other text that you've already had them read or that you've read to them. These comparisons might be of something quite specific, such as comparing the characters from two stories, or it might be something more all-encompassing, like comparing two social studies chapters, comparing two civilizations in grade 4, for instance. Each of these exercises requires that students think deeply about the language of the text that they're trying to understand. These kinds of exercises can be done before or after the students have read a text. I kind of like them beforehand because that means when you work with them as a group, these kids have already had been able to try to make sense of the text. Now, of course, if they're going to analyze texts in these ways successfully, you can't start out with a seat work assignment. Initially, you need to do these with the boys and girls so that they learn how to do them. And one of the Connors studies that I cite in this paper This was one of the big takeaways. Kids often don't have any idea how to do the sight work. Using similar activities throughout the year and preparing students to complete them will make a big difference. So, for example, in that idea of having kids compare texts in some way or compare characters across text, it really helps if you've put together, you know, some kind of a graphic organizer to guide the kids thinking on that so they can go back and reread and look for key information. And of course, the first time or two that they do this, this can't be independent work. This has to be work that you do with the kids to prepare them to work on their own. And with that, that'll be my final word on seat work for the day. If you're interested in the 4 or 5 research references in this, go to Shanahan on Literacy and look for the August 24th, 2024 blog entry, Seat Work That Makes Sense for Reading. With that, I want to thank Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, and thank you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.